Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher. I'm a current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. I believe that teachers are the critical component to student voice and to helping them develop that maker mindset. So on this podcast, I share strategies, I share tools, I share ideas, I share stories, I share some of those big epic mistakes that I've made and continue to make along the way on this journey. Lately, we've been talking a lot more about distance learning. We've been talking about what it means to make it happen. We've been talking about what it means to have student-centered learning in the midst of this time of distance learning. We've been talking about, what does it mean for PBL? What does it mean for getting students to do student-centered learning off the screen? And today I'm going to talk about, this core idea of what it means to increase engagement in, virtual meetings, which is something a lot of us deal with. And my next podcast episode, which is going to come out really soon, is going to be, what does it mean to empower students? Because really, deep down inside, the lack of engagement is really a struggle. It's really difficult. But one of the ways that we solve that problem is through focusing on empowering students. And of course, the other way is to focus on equity, to make sure that students have access, to make sure that we're being cognizant of that as well. But I want to get into this idea of something really specific, which is we want to improve our virtual meetings. And so I'm going to begin with a bit of a story. I have a friend who is a phenomenal teacher. I mean, she has been making a positive impact on middle schoolers' lives for like 20 plus years. And I used to go into her class during my prep period, and I would take detailed notes so I could refine my own approach as a teacher. I mean, she had this ability to reach the hardest, most closed-off student while still managing to make sure that the so-called kids in the middle didn't slip through the cracks. She would challenge the students who were gifted and advanced and ahead of the curve, and I just never understood how she was able to do it all. Well, yesterday she mentioned that she had no students show up to her optional class meeting. It was a district requirement that teachers hold open office hours, but they had to remain optional. Now, when nobody showed up, she was crushed. And I don't blame her. That's really, really hard. She found herself questioning whether students cared, and she actually messaged a group of us privately on Facebook and asked this question: was I wrong to think that I knew how to build a classroom community? Have I lost the ability to be relevant? Have I become that teacher? It was painful to see her reaction because I guarantee this, her students love her. She is one of the best teachers I know, and yet nobody showed up. One thing I've learned from teaching distance learning classes at the university level is that it's common to have nobody show up to an optional meeting. I've been teaching virtually and online for over 5 years, and I used to do distance learning camps back when I taught the K-12 level, but I can tell you that when there are optional meetings, sometimes people just don't show up. We're talking about students who are paying money to get a degree, in my case, right? But they still don't always show up. They're earning a graduate degree to become teachers, and they sometimes don't show up. They are highly motivated. In a cohort model where I teach multiple classes and I've developed a relationship with them, and even then, the default, when it's optional, is to not show up. It hurts. It feels personal. But that's rarely the case. A failure to show up doesn't mean that students don't care. Many of them don't want to feel like an imposition. Many feel that they're doing okay and don't need the help during optional office hours. Many of them are living busy lives and they're simply distracted. And if they can take something off their plate, they will. But I'd like to share a few strategies that have worked for me as a way to boost attendance in those optional meetings. So here are five ways to increase attendance and optional online meetups. Number one, invite specific students with a personal email. Say something like, I could really use your participation tomorrow. Or if you provide specific feedback on an assignment, also say, it's not required, but I would strongly suggest that you show up to our meeting tomorrow. I'll be reteaching it, and I would love to teach a group of you this same strategy. Students want to feel wanted. At times, I send the email to a small group of students, and we basically do a small group intervention. Now, I want to point this out. My son's a math teacher does this. She asks specific students to meet her after school. And now that we've moved to distance learning, she does the same thing in distance learning classes. And it's really cool to see how many people show up. You know, in her case, she has very specific topics. And while she's allowing any students to show up, she's specifically asking the ones who are most at risk to show up. I know of a teacher who makes phone calls to invite a few of her students who are kind of slipping through the cracks to show up to the meetings. And for what it's worth, I would hate to do that. I hate talking on the phone. I hate making phone calls. And I want to be clear that this teacher is going above and beyond. This is not an expectation that you do the same thing, but this teacher swears by it. She says, if you make those phone calls, they will show up. Number two, reframe it from being a help session to a peer feedback session. This reduces the stigma of needing help. Think of it as the teacher version of people wanting life coaches, but not admitting that they want counseling, right? I had open office hours to help students with a big portfolio project. It was the EdTPA. It was part of how people became certified to be teachers, right? So my students really had to pass this test. It was a big, big deal. And I did this for 2 weeks and nobody showed up. Like nobody, not one even showed up to this chance to learn more about the EdTPA. Then I changed it to an optional peer feedback. So instead of a help session, it was a feedback workshop. And guess what? 2/3 of my students showed up. I broke them into small groups on Zoom and checked in on them. And then at the end, we had a Q&A where I looked at, you know, the peer feedback they gave, and I said, hey, here's some things you also need to know. What are some questions you still have? And actually, it was highly engaging. They all had questions, but by engaging in peer feedback first, that helped them figure out what they didn't know, which allowed them to then ask me questions. By giving peer feedback, there was a strong message that all students needed help, that all students were in progress. Nobody had nailed it yet. And what it did is it evened the playing field for everyone. Number three, ask students to show up to give feedback on how you're doing as a teacher. Students want to have a voice in how things are going. And this is the kind of feedback I need to improve my instruction. There's a core idea from UX design that you are constantly getting user feedback and that you use this user feedback to improve whatever product you're designing. The same thing is true in virtual courses. By getting their feedback, that makes all the difference. Now, this is why I love having students annotate documents. I'm a huge fan of having students do surveys on how things are going, you know, for you as a teacher, you know, how you're teaching. But this is a chance to invite the students and say, hey, I want everyone to tell me, how is it going? And from there, the question of how is it going becomes something that you answer. And you can then move into a place where you're actually kind of doing some small group tutoring and helping clear up some misconceptions. Number four, make it a social hour with trivia. I know this sounds crazy and silly and whatever else, but I'm being totally serious here. Sometimes you need to play together for half an hour and then move into something more academic. I'm a huge fan of this. I had a distance learning course with members and they were from multiple cohorts. They did not know each other. They didn't particularly trust each other. It wasn't good in the beginning. And I could feel that. I could see that difference. So I decided to break up the cliques a bit by doing basically a video conference happy hour. I didn't call it happy hour because obviously there's the connection to alcohol and everything, but it was a time to be social. And we started out with some, you know, chances to talk. We talked about movies we watched and this and that. And then we did a 90s trivia night. By 90s trivia night, it was the decade of the 1990s. I wasn't asking them about like people who were, you know, in their 90s. Like I wasn't asking questions about dentures and stuff like that. But you get the idea. It was a 90s trivia night. And I asked them to dress up in 90s outfits. The last part tanked. It was a big ask. I get it. It did not work. Nobody dressed up as if they were from the 90s. I think they would have if it was the 80s. But anyway, I'm getting off track here. But you get the idea. It was goofy. It was silly. There was a lot of laughter. There was a lot of talking about childhood memories. There was a lot of goofiness. And it worked. It worked really, really well. Number five, do something hands-on. The biggest benefit from a video conference is that it is synchronous. It's happening right there in the moment. And I found that it's better to do direct instruction as a video that they can rewatch, right? Which is a sort of flipped instruction model. And then use this video time, this video conference time, to do something much more hands-on. You could do a scavenger hunt. My daughter's fourth grade teacher did a really cool math scavenger hunt last week. And then, you know, this led to looking at the things that they grabbed from their kitchen. They became the manipulatives that they used for a math lesson. You could do a show and tell activity. We did some our own kind of show and tell activity where I said, choose one item that represents a healthy way that you are dealing with social isolation. It could be a hobby, a mindset, or a creative endeavor, and explain why you chose that item. And that was super hands-on. You could do a divergent thinking challenge where you give them certain items and say, what can you make with this? But that being said, some groups have better luck with an asynchronous option, and that's totally okay. The biggest takeaway is that a lack of attendance has nothing to do with your value as a teacher or your relationship with your students. Success in a time of social isolation, in a time of emergency teaching, in a time like this, success has to be about you showing up rather than your students. Success has to be about you being faithful rather than you seeing results. It's hard. It is so challenging. And there are days when you're going to look at it and feel like you're not making a difference. But believe me, you are. Teaching is deeply relational, and physical distance makes this distance learning thing really hard at a time like this. But I think it helps to recognize that even for those of us who have been doing this distance learning gig for years, it always takes extra effort to build and maintain community. And when the results aren't there and they don't look the way you expect them, it's not a reflection of who you are as a teacher. It's a reflection of just the sheer challenge presented by distance learning itself. But even though you can't see it, you are making a difference. And students will remember that you were one of the adults that was solid, that was stable, that was there for them in this time. And they will remember you forever. So thank you for doing what you're doing. Hey, thank you for listening. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review wherever you get your podcast, whether it is on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever? Again, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for being there in these hard times. You're doing great work. Go out and make something awesome.